Hi, I'm Kristen, and this is Carla.
Hi.
Join us as we explore origin stories and fun facts, or something. And we're back, baby.
Oh, yeah. We didn't even start.
We did.
Oh, you mean...
We're back just in general.
We took a little recording vacation.
It's not a vacation for you guys, because we were organized.
Yeah.
But we took a little break. Breaky break.
And sorry for all the white noise, everybody, but my house is humming with action and heaters, furnaces turning on. And because the weather decided to go dropping to like minus two.
Oh.
It's been so windy. It's like hurricane level
wind. It's been windy here, too, which is crazy because we don't normally have wind.
It's coming from the darn prairies.
And then, screw you, prairies.
Yeah, and then it's going to be like minus seven overnight. I'm like, I have had it up to here.
Ew.
Also, listeners, I was complaining to Kristen about the anemia thing. You guys, I had no clue that it was so crazy. That it breaks you mind, body, and spirit. So I'm just eating full on oranges. Then my reflux kicks in because of the oranges. And then I'm like, I'm going to die.
Are oranges like good for anemia? Vitamin C? Or is there something
vitamin
else?
Vitamin C helps with iron intake.
Oh, so you're just having vitamin C and no iron.
Well, I won't have scurvy, all right? Shut up. Well, I figured it must be intake because I was eating irony things, but whatever, body.
Ugh,
or my meds are all deciding to hate each other. And I'm like, you know what? I wish I was like Mr. Burns, you know, in that episode where he has all the diseases and they're all balancing each other out.
We just referenced that at work the other day.
Right?
Yeah, I'm like, yes. That's the best analogy for anything.
And tomorrow for a friend's birthday, I'm going to brave going out to a restaurant for the first time in like two, if not more, years.
It's going to be fine. You're going to be great.
I'm nervous.
It's going to be great.
Well, I'll be fine. Like, I'll be great with my, you know, like, what's that called? Protocol? I've been watching way too much Star Trek. You guys, Star Trek is... Okay, I have been deprived of you and people.
I'm just going...
How are you doing?
Carla gets on her thing where she just starts talking and there's no... She doesn't even take a breath in between. And then I'll always point out afterwards, like, oh, you've been talking for like 15 minutes straight. It's great. It's always energetic. It's good. It works out well for me because I'm like, I don't want to talk. It's a great podcaster. Doesn't want to talk. It's like when that episode when I said I didn't want to learn new things. I
and
am
I'm just
doing
rambling
the wrong
about
thing.
God knows what. What's going on?
Star Trek. It's important. Oh, my gosh. So I'm back at work now. I went back to work after having 6 months off and working on my own business and podcasts and whatnot. And it's brutal. It's nice.
Oh,
I have
no.
to say, it's nice having like small talk chit chat with people, which I didn't realize I missed because I generally don't really like people that much.
I miss it. But today in the dog park, I just completely like shut down and I was kind of cranky and irritable too.
Yeah.
And normally, especially with dog people, I'm like, yeah, here's my window. I'll be able to chat with somebody.
Yeah.
Even during the pandemic, I was like all over dog people where they're like, get away from me, stranger.
Stranger danger.
And today I was so awkward. And my nephew was just looking at me like, why aren't you talking more? I'm like,
That does not compute. I'm broken.
Dog, play. I'm like, that's it.
I totally thought I would be like that at work, especially because I haven't been in that environment in such a long time. Because even before, like when I, you know, the last job that I did in film, I was working from home. For the last like year and a half, I've been working from home.
Right.
And then I had, you know, half a year off. So the last 2 years, I haven't been in an office at all.
There's like 20 of you around the water cooler.
Basically. I cannot stop talking. Like, I just want to talk non-stop. It also helps that I'm working with, like, a guy that I worked with before that we're, like, we just get along so well. So we just are non-stop talking the whole time.
Oh, my gosh.
And making jokes and stuff.
Now, you know how I feel.
Yeah, that's true. Right? Oh, my gosh. You're the me in this scenario somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just know. I get it.
Won't stop talking. Yeah. You understand
now. We need people.
Now.
See, we need people around that, like, you can just have those easy conversations. I think that's what was missing during COVID was because every interaction I had with somebody was very intentional. Like, you have to make a plan to call somebody or do, like, a video chat or, you know, all this kind of stuff. Like, it was a lot more set up. You never really had those instances where you're just casually walking to the kitchen at work and then you end up chatting with whoever, like some random person.
And I had the opposite where that was my whole entire existence. So
just talking to random people?
Just, no, like super casual because I worked, you know, I watched my nephew. That was my job for a long time. Yeah. Just like, and so I'd just be hanging out, chilling with my sister. We'd have like coffee breaks in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And then like, yeah, and I'd just be around people that I could, and I'd go to the farm in the summer, so I'd have my friends there, and then we'd just chat, and so it's all casual chat.
Yeah.
So the idea of talking to, like, a functioning person to do some kind of task, my brain is like,
My brain is also like that with the actual work aspect of work. I'm really only good at the casual chit-chat. I excel at casual chit-chat. I'm going to get fired soon is what I'm trying
to say. Our new company will be to teach people how to casual chit-chat because...
Oh my gosh.
If anyone's good at it...
Yeah.
Because I don't actually want people to like delve into my life at all because I hate my life. So I'm very much like... And I'm so good at deflecting and asking about, like, other people.
Yeah.
About their lives and getting them to talk. And then if they are like, oh, what do you do? I'm like,
I watch Star Trek.
How dare you?
We debate why holodecks haven't been invented yet.
Blasted holodecks.
Those bastards. Man. All right. Well, should we get started? Whose turn is it first?
Do you want me to go? I think it's my turn.
Is it your turn first?
Ooh. We said that. I think it's my turn. God help me.
Hey, put your timer on.
Oh, yeah, because I have so much content I have to
You're like, it won't be a problem with this one. Carla's overprepared as usual.
I have. You guys, you'll be blown away by how organized and how much... solid information I have this week. You won't even believe it. It's
Carla's
exactly
great at sarcasm. Her sarcasm game is strong. Almost as good as her chit-chat game.
What do you... chit-chat game needs to be my rap name.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Why do I have a rap name? I just want to chat. Like, we should have talked before this recording because I have no interest in getting into it. Sorry, people. You're going to have to listen to a small talk for the next half an hour.
Small talk.
Yeah, small talk with your best friend.
Yeah, that's our favorite kind of talk with each other, small talk. So that weather.
That's why
crazy.
We're still best friends, probably, because we enjoy talking about nothing, right?
That is true. We are the Seinfeld of friendships.
Yeah, you just get together and it's like, we don't need to catch up properly.
And we talk about it at hyper speed, like super fast in our own weird language that nobody else understands.
That's
so,
what the podcast sounds like.
Good thing we've got
like.
A podcast. Yeah. Nobody understands
Kate,
us.
Kate, you guys, sorry, I tell you to shut up. Shut up now. Did you miss us, everybody? Oh, yeah, they didn't miss us. Oh.
They didn't miss us because we're organized and professional.
How are their hearts going to grow fonder?
I don't know.
Well, all right. Okay. I'm just sassing you. Oh, God.
Okay. Okay, go.
I'm going. I read a news story. Actually, my sister sent me this because she gets all the weird, crazy science stories.
Okay.
Like today, she told me that like mushrooms apparently have 50 word vocabulary, that they're all like talking to each other. Mm-hmm. And
50 words.
This
wow.
one guy had, I know. And this one guy had like worms, fly larvae in his, on his eyeball. So
gross.
It was making him itch. I know. She sends
Why?
Me all this disgusting stuff. And I'm like, it's both my sister. She's the queen of disgusting science stories.
But... she also say juicy seven times?
Yes.
She's so gross.
Listen to this, everybody. Okay. So I read a news story. Scientists breed honeybees to fight deadly parasites.
Ooh.
So there's an improved variety of honeybee that's 30% more likely to survive the Varroa mite infestation.
Okay.
So they're all like, you guys, it's this whole thing.
The information is down, and they're all like, you guys. Oh my god.
Oh no. I'm crying from my stupidity. My brain is like already done.
Man. I know.
I've maxed it out, you guys.
Maxed it out. With our riveting intro conversation, our riveting banter. We're gonna have to edit some of this episode.
You guys, there's not gonna be an episode this week. I can't stop crying. Okay. Whatever. It's an amazing story, okay? We've got these beautiful bees that are like, screw you, mites, right?
So yeah.
They're all gonna die. I'm out of breath. Oh, God. Okay. This is painful. So I'm doing beekeeping. Tears in my eyes. I can't see my page.
Oh my gosh. I'm covered in bees.
Yes.
Eddie is our best joke
ever. Here's the problem with my research this week, you guys. My very end of the research. I was racing ahead to get to like, for some reason, I got into my head that I wanted to know like kind of modern, like who invented.
I know, stop it, because you're making me laugh.
Sorry, I'm sorry. But who invented the, like, the frame beehive? And so I raced through all this, like, the actual origin of beekeeping.
To get that information?
My brain was determined. And then I got to the modern stuff, and I'm like, I'm not doing this.
I do that all the time.
I had no interest. I'm like, no, I don't care. So at the end, you're just going to get some names of interest, and that's all you're getting out of me.
Okay. That's why I put fun facts in mine all the time. That's my, like, cheating way of, like,
well,
being like,
well,
this other stuff happened that I didn't want to research fully, so it's a fun fact.
Let me just dab my eyes here for the 90th time. Oh, my gosh. Okay. So, apiculture is the maintenance of bee colonies in apiaries or a bee yard. Okay, so if you're
a bee
like
yard. Oh, apis something, cute.
But okay. That's honeybees specifically. Oh God, I'm so hot. I'm wearing this like giant knit poncho, everybody, and it's like 100 degrees. All right, so beekeeping, it's mostly like honeybees, obviously, in case anybody didn't know, but they also collect honey, beeswax, propolis, flower pollen, bee pollen, and royal jelly.
Cool. Is there any beekeeping not with honeybees? Would there be any reason to keep non-honeybees?
Well, honeybee probably proper, not. It's like its own species, but they have, some people do stingless honeybees, but it is just honey.
Oh. Do all bees produce honey? Is there such thing
like,
as
yes.
a non-honeybee?
No, I think they all do. Well, bumblebees aren't honeybees.
What's a bumblebee? They're so cute.
They are. Those are the big fat ones.
I know, but
I don't know.
Like,
and they live underground or whatever? Oh, Lord. I don't know anything about bees.
I don't
Everybody needs to tell. For the history of beekeeping. I don't know what bees are, but
this is going to be informative, you guys.
I don't need to know different species, okay? Do you want to go?
No, go. This is great.
20 minutes in. I can't get serious. You guys, I've got the giggles. Okay. Some bees, I don't know what kind, are kept to pollinate crops.
Okay.
Or to produce bees for sale. Bees for sale. And this all dates back to about 10,000 years ago.
What?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Right.
Whoa. 10,000 years ago?
I know.
That's really
old. That almost sounded fake, by the way. Whoa, 10,000 years ago.
No, it was legitimate. So, I'm
no,
shocked.
No, I know it was. I thought it was, like, I thought, okay, who cares about my thoughts? Anyway, okay. this is a disaster. Okay. As beekeeping has become... Oh, this is just a fun fact. Fun fact in the beginning.
Ooh. Ooh.
That's a good sign.
Has just beekeeping... Just fun facts.
My whole thing is fun facts. As beekeeping has become more accessible and easy for people to take up as a hobby, some people are... I can't do this. I'm laughing too much, you guys.
Just killing myself over here.
I know you're laughing, and then I get giggly, and I'm trying to be so serious.
Okay, we're okay. Professionals.
I'm gonna hide your face.
And yeah, do you. That so you don't have to look at me. Okay, I'll start. Yeah. I won't audibly laugh.
That helps. So you're shaking in the back. Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever. Forget the fun fact. It's not important. Okay. In a cave in Spain. It's called the Cave of the Spider. They found an 8,000-year-old cave painting of a honey seeker. So in this image, it's kind of cool if you Google it, but this person is either climbing a tree, and some people say maybe a rope ladder on the side of a cliff, but they're holding a basket, and their arm is in a beehive, and there's bees flying around them.
And then the next picture is them screaming and running away with a bunch of bees chasing them.
Well, I kind of love that they included the bees. I'm like, that's kind of cool.
That is so cool. I am seriously shocked at how old this is. I mean, I guess it makes sense because it's a natural, they could have stumbled upon it.
Well, do you remember that Apple episode that we did where apples, I think, were like a rare source of like sweetness?
Oh, yeah.
Or became a rare, remember? Or no, what was a rare thing? Oh, no, apples were sour before. Oh, my God, I don't remember anything. Anyway, there weren't a lot of naturally sweet things.
Right.
And so it was probably this, like, hot commodity for people.
Yeah, when they, stumbled upon it. And then they were like, oh, my gosh, we need this now. That's so cool.
There was an article a research paper, I guess, in the Nature Journal. And the researcher is asked, when and where did a regular association between farmers and bees emerge? And so, these are the ones who they studied, I think more than, it was about 6,400 clay pots and vessels and pot shirts. They're the little pieces of clay stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, I'm just going to read. So they explain early agriculturists used unglazed ceramic containers to store and process commodities. And apparently the porous surface of the clay trapped compounds that we can extract and analyze. Apparently beeswax has a really specific signature. And so they were able to because a lot of natural things like honey and even the earliest beehives were biodegradable. Right? But beeswax lasts for freaking ever because it's waterproof, right?
Oh, cool.
And so they were able to analyze the stuff and they found actual beeswax inside these vessels, kind of used as a glaze sometimes or just in the pore. So people were storing.
No way.
At least the beeswax, right? Cool. But probably the honey too, right?
I mean, if they're going in for the wax, I'm sure they'd be taking the honey.
Yeah. So they said the honey was probably for culinary uses. I think probably medicinal. I would argue medicinal stuff too, because some cultures use it as antiseptic, maybe antibacterial. I don't know quite which one.
Wounds and stuff that. Yeah. Okay.
And they used beeswax, which they could have used for lighting, or as a plasticizer to soften brittle tree resin adhesives. Oh. Or chewing gum, anybody? Remember the plasticizers? As waterproofing agents for porous vessels or even in medicine and cosmetics. So maybe they used beeswax in
Oh my gosh,
makeup. So they found that these chemical traces of beeswax that they found in these products goes back, like I said, at least 9,000 years. And it points to a widespread exploitation of bee products by early farming societies in Europe, the Near East, and North Africa. Bees, just because, so this was, I think, the end of the Ice Age and already getting into, Iron Age and Bronze Age, but, and the whole, Neolithic farming thing. I can't remember if they overlap. Anyway, what was my point? But the bees had like a limit as to how far their habitat or range went. So they didn't go past, like, I think Denmark, and they weren't in Scotland or Ireland or Norway or Sweden. So not every, it wasn't like all over the freaking place.
Right.
But yeah, it did go back pretty far. So,
cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, huh? And they just found that out in like 2015. They made the paper.
No way.
So they didn't, they said it's just really hard to find evidence of like again, the bee products and also bee habitats, and the fossil record is pretty crappy, right? Because they're tiny little bees.
Yeah, of course. I bet for insects, it's like really hard for them to find some of that stuff, right?
So they can't say for sure if people got their honey from, I think some people say apiculture, but I say apiculture, or like hunting for honey. So like just going and finding natural hives.
Right. Yeah, like when did they start like...
Yeah.
Almost domesticating it in a way, right?
Exactly. That's exactly the term that they use. Yeah. So the earliest known evidence of an artificial beehive, which was like hollow clay cylinders, was found in an apiary in the Jordan Valley dating to the 10th to 9th century BC or the Iron Age. So this is like the farthest that they've been able to go back for.
Whoa.
Yeah. They found 30 intact hives made of straw and unbaked clay. The hives were found in orderly rows, three high, so they were like stacked on top of each other, in a manner that could have accommodated around 100 hives, held more than 1 million bees, and had a potential annual yield of 500 kilograms of honey and 70 kilograms of beeswax.
Holy cow.
And I joke that they find records of the town being wiped out by bee stings. Those cave paintings. And the last drawing was...
And 7 million EpiPens. Oh.
So humans might have exploited bees before pot making, like before people even made pots. But like you can't really prove that, right?
Tell.
So yeah. So
it's kind of like that whole dog thing where it's like it's hard to tell because you can't find origin. Like you can't, we're only basing it on what we can actually find, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, looking at ancient sites, we know that humans were attempting to maintain colonies of wild bees in artificial hives made from hollow logs, wooden boxes, pottery vessels, and woven straw baskets.
No way.
The quintessential kind of like clip art of like the kind of domed honeycomb thing, like hive, beehive with a little, those are called skeps, and they were usually like woven like out of straw or like... straw-like material.
Like we made them. Like people made them.
Yeah.
No way.
So that's what that image is.
They're not actually the natural... Right. Yeah, I guess. They're not the natural...
I mean, yeah, there's like the whole hanging Winnie the Pooh type hive. But these ones, they're the classic dome usually that you see in those clip art pictures, right? Like the little like ice cream. Anyway.
That's crazy.
The domestication of bees was shown in Egyptian art from about 4,000 years ago. They used simple hives and smoke already. They found like apiculture type of tools, and they also stored honey in jars. On one temple, workers are depicted blowing smoke into hives as they remove honeycombs.
That's crazy. So that was like already almost an industry at that point. In a way, right? Like they had tools for it.
It was full blown.
Wow.
Yeah. They were totally like just on it. And I think it was already kind of associated with like the higher culture thing, right? Because,
yeah.
They had like special, like the beekeepers and everything. On the website queenbeefarms.ca, she expanded on like the Egyptian history of things. She said they think that by 1500 BCE, beekeeping had spread throughout Egypt, with Egyptian administrators accepting honey presented by farmers as payment. Oh, okay, so farmers, I guess, could have make honey too. And honey vessels were stamped according to their quality and color already.
No,
so it's like full-on product. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, wow.
Honey was a common offering to the Egyptian gods. They also used beeswax for candle making. What a crappy candle. and an important substance used in the mummification process, apparently. So that's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I assume they mean beeswax, not honey. Right. They're just slathering the mummy in honey. Tasty. Okay, you guys, this is my favorite thing in the world. This might beat Hollywood chickens for me.
Okay.
Maybe. Okay, not really, but kind of. So, they have an inscription, they found one, archaeological finding, that an inscription that records when honeybees were introduced to the land of Suhu or Suham in Mesopotamia. So okay. I'm going to read this. I am Shamash Resh Usur, the governor of Suhu and the land of Mari. Bees that collect honey, which none of my ancestors have ever seen or brought into the land of Suhu, I brought down from the mountain of the men of Haba and made them settle in the orchards of the town. This is the name of the town, you guys. Gabari built it. What? The guy goes on to say that everyone needs to give him credit for basically bringing honeybees to them. So I can't believe that this town translation is Gabari built it. And then it just dawned on me that this guy is like, I built this town, says Gabari. Then Shamash is like, I brought honeybees. Yeah. Right? Like, what kind of culture is this? Like, I was just crying from laughter. They're just competing with each other.
Yeah. Also, it's that thing of like, you know when people are rich, like, real rich people, like old money rich people, will never tell you how rich they are.
Yes.
It's only people who are moderately rich but not really, really rich that will talk about it all the time. So, like, really, you brought honeybees? I don't know about that. You probably got stung by a bee and then you were like, came up with a theory that it followed you home or something.
How dare you? Shamash, the governor, brought the honeybees, okay?
He's like, I got to tell people I did something. It was a re-election time or something. He's got his little like election signs with a big B on it. Look what I did. Everybody.
Oh my god. Gabari
built this, but I did this. I love that though. So, I think we should name stuff after people more often. Yeah.
I guess we kind of do. We do, I suppose.
I guess.
When people do arenas and stuff, they like. But it's usually like a company.
And I guess like cities are kind of like that. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Kind of. Yes, I'm used to, like, the arena. Like, Rogers is a person and, like...
Right.
Rexall. Yeah.
But not so clearly, like...
I know.
I did this.
I love that so much. I was like, I did such a triple take, you guys. I'm like, is that literally the translation? Like, what?
Anyway. I love it.
I hope that's true. I hope it wasn't just some really bad translation.
It's
you
true.
You know, like, Jenkinstown, right? Oh, I guess, like, Smithtown or whatever. Those kinds of places.
Yeah.
Circleville. Anyway.
Hicksville. It's named after a bunch of Hicks.
They were majorly into beekeeping in ancient Greece. Archaeologists found a bunch of hives, smoking pots, honey extractors, etc.
Well, honey's a big thing there, I feel.
Oh, yeah. Big time, right?
They're like Greek yogurt. That's all I've got to go on. I don't know where
you don't choose
from.
Like baklava or something.
Yeah, like actual traditional
baklava.
I think so. Isn't
oh,
it?
Oh Lord, I'm. Oh no, I don't know my cultures, you guys. I'm stupid. Okay, so the problem with like looking at like say like ancient history type of like the beehives is that not one single type of beehive was used in any specific place. So it's not like in Greece they favored one specific type of beehive and then you found evidence of that everywhere.
Oh.
They had different kinds of beehives. And people, right? So we're going from a place where there's not like the modern day box with the frame.
Right.
Or even like the little skeps, like the domes. You could have like a tree log or
like people
a clay pot or
just
even
made
in
it
stones.
Whatever they could find and they could kind of lure the bees to it and like get
exactly.
them in there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of this stuff, like how can you really prove, and a lot of it doesn't, like it biodegrades or how do you prove that it's a bee thing? And so it's really, you know, challenging.
That's interesting.
For them.
Yeah.
But in ancient Greece, they found, so all the, they don't know what's happening with the biodegraded stuff, right?
Right.
But they found two kinds of ceramic beehives in Greece. So there's the horizontal one and then the vertical one. The horizontal ones were like long tubes where one end would have an entrance for the bees to come in.
Okay.
And then they would usually, like, score the inside of these tubes, and then, like, the bees would kind of, like, start creating their honeycombs inside this tube.
Yeah.
And then the back had, like, was sealed with, like, a disc or some kind of mud or plug or something so that the beekeeper could, like, take that down, put smoke in, like, blow some smoke, like, put smoke mm-hmm. in, right? And then they could take the honeycomb out while they, like, the bees kind of fled to the other end by the entrance, their own entrance.
Right.
Right? So it's like this tube situation where they're like, okay, you bees go over there. We're going to steal some of your honey. And then, you know. The vertical one is basically, like, imagine a bucket. It looks like a bucket. It's like a pot that has, like, a tapered bottom a little bit, and then the top gets wider. It's usually what the vessels look like.
Okay,
so,
yep.
And they would, like, put a stick or a few sticks kind of across the top of the bucket. And then they would seal that, like, or cover it with a stone so that rain water can't get into this bucket.
Oh, okay.
And then from those sticks, the bees would make their honeycomb hang down. So when you lift the rock or take off the lid, you can then lift the sticks. Oh. And then there's your honeycomb, right?
Hey, and that's similar to, like, what the boxes are.
Yeah, now. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so people were kind of cluing in a little bit, right?
Okay.
So ancient Greece, this is definitely the kind of, like, precursor to
So this, like, is where they're kind of refining it a little bit
more. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, when we go travel way ahead, the one guy actually takes note of the Greek style of beehive and or bee thing. Artificial beehive. And he was like, we're onto something here.
I'm going to steal it and market the crap out of it and make millions. Glue.
He didn't. That's great.
Oh.
So Aristotle apparently spoke at length about bees and beekeeping. A bunch of Roman writers wrote on the subject as well. The ancient Chinese had a huge bee culture thing going on as well. So it was like this whole thing. So did the ancient Maya. And I want to expand on their stuff a little bit because it's kind of cool.
They did so much stuff. It's crazy.
Yeah. These guys were ahead of the time, like everybody, they really which were. Is great.
Yeah.
So I'll get to this later, but just kind of, so bear with me. But Maya had a greatly developed knowledge of beekeeping. Oh, this is from Queen Bee Farms again because she had kind of a cool write-up about it. But like they had the, they could actually... They had the brains, basically, to divide existing hives to not only increase the numbers of hives that they had. So, sorry, the, how do I put this? So, the bees, they split them up, basically, so they could kind of, like, have more hives going.
Okay, yeah.
Get it?
Yeah.
And they knew not to over-harvest in order to leave enough honey stores for the honeybees. So,
right,
they had well-established apiaries with hundreds and sometimes thousands of native stingless honeybee hives. Their hives were made out of hollowed-out logs in the shape of, like, large drums. And they were, like, all, they had, like, special carvings on them and that kind of thing. And
that's so cool.
They would sign that, like, put the name of the owner or put the sign of the owner on the hives.
Cool.
And I was laughing because I'm like, it's Shamash, the governor of Sioux. He's there, like,
this beehive's
mine. Yeah. Okay. So this is why it's important to kind of think, like, why the Maya were ahead of the time with their, like, foresight with, like, making sure you don't kill everything. So. Even though beekeeping and honey was, like, such a huge part of people's lives, by medieval times up to colonization, it's, like, massive. And fun fact, bees were one of the first animals brought over to...
No way!
I think South America. Yeah, by, like, the Spanish, I think it was, whoever the hell it was. Yeah, Spanish. And, yeah, so, like, on the boats, right? So it was, like, one of the first...
Oh, my gosh, that's crazy!
Yeah. Okay, so the problem is...
I would never even have thought that bees would be the first.
Yeah. But even though people clued in to, like, how to make transportable... Is that... No, what's it called? Portable? Mm. Portable. Beehives.
Yeah.
So, like, with the little tree stumps or whatever, they figured out, like, hey, we can move these.
I can take my bees with me.
But would take the honeycomb out, and most of them, they had to, like... destroy the hive Or some cultures full-on killed the bees first because they didn't want to get stung. And then they would take out the honeycomb and then squeeze out the honey, like with all the larvae and everything.
So they just, like, killed the bees every time they wanted to get honey?
Yeah.
That's so some destructive. Cultures. Okay.
But the Maya clearly were like, you guys, we don't have to. But basically it sounded like they were treated it like an annual crop. So they probably, like, started a fresh kind of hive, right, each year, each season. Okay. It wasn't like they're going to live here forever, right? Like, okay. They destroyed everything. Because that's the only way they kind of clued in, like, that's the only way they could get the combs.
Okay.
And they didn't know anything about bees. Like, how right. they lived, they didn't even know how they, like, procreated. They had no knowledge. Right. Like, so it wasn't, I mean,
it's a pretty impressive
thing.
That they could do anything with it, really, right? Without knowing anything about them.
Yeah. They were just like, tasty honey.
Give me more.
Yeah. So it wasn't until the 18th century, you guys, that scientists started to, like, investigate how bee colonies actually work. It's
Holy
insane.
Cow, that is a long time.
Yeah. So 1682, we have an English clergyman, slightly before 18th century. Excuse me. I need honey. Traveler, he goes to Greece and he's like, whoa, look at their cool beehives, as we mentioned, right? Mm-hmm. In 1700, it wasn't until 1700 that it was, okay, this is crazy, that it was understood bees gather nectar from flowers with which honey is made. Prior to this time, it was thought the honey was collected by the bees ready-made in the flowers. So people didn't even know how bees made honey or how they got it. They thought they went to the flowers, sucked it out, and basically stored it for themselves.
Oh my gosh, how adorable. That they're just like stealing what they think that the bees were like taking from the flowers. And they're like, yoink, we'll take that. Did they ever try to go to the flowers themselves and be like, can't I just squeeze out some honey from this damn flower?
Why would you when you have like a little worker to do it for you, right?
I guess, but the worker's going to sting you. They were stingless honeybees. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, I mean, these are ancient people. What the hell did they know?
You idiot.
In 1770, I'm almost done. In 1770, there's an English guy named Thomas Wildman who published a treatise? How do you say that word? Treatise? Anyway, on the management of bees. Oh, that's one of those words I've never had to read out loud.
That's one of those words. Treatise? That sounds wrong.
Yikes.
Though.
I know. Treatise is like treaties. Anyway.
Yeah.
On the management of bees, in which he described the invention of a new kind of hive that did away with the inhuman and impolitic slaughter of the bees. So he created a woven hive, like a skep, like people have done, but it had a removable top. And instead of letting the bees build a freeform structure inside, seven frames were hung from... My time is up, but I'm almost done. Yeah, that's my timer.
I was like, what's happening?
There are seven frames. Oh, sorry, what was I saying? So instead of letting the bees build a freeform structure inside, the bees were like, we're going to build from these frames, like on the frames, kind of.
Okay, yeah.
And he also encouraged the idea of stacking hives so that, like, the bees, when they were done with the one, they could move up to the next level, kind of. And then, so you could take the honeycomb from the bottom and then. Yeah, okay. So he's like, let's go here. Anyway, just to super fast track, I didn't want to get into all, like, the future stuff, but everybody goes on and on about L.L. Langstroth, this American guy who brought beekeeping to the U.S., and they're like, he invented the modern, like, the bee thing. But what everybody fails to point out is that he, and even he admitted to it, that he was influenced by a bunch of people before him. So one guy you can Google is Francois Hubert, I don't know how to say it. This Polish guy, which was kind of fun and surprising.
Oh, that's cool.
Jan Gerzon, not the best pronunciation, but I tried. He was this Polish Roman Catholic priest, but also apiarist, who was like, found out like some crazy cool stuff about bees and how they work and everything. So 18th century, you have full on like, and 19th century, you have full on scientists are like,
yeah, like people
oh,
are into
bees
it
work.
And they're actually learning the proper things.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have William Broughton Carr in the UK in 1890. He invented his own kind of beehive called the WCB hot beehive. And yeah, so I don't know. It's just this cool
That's
thing.
So cool.
And don't listen to anyone on the internet who's like, oh, this one person invented the beehive. It's like, no,
I just don't think that happens with very many things at all.
No, because if you're all interested in bees, you're all going to be reading as much as you can on it.
Yeah.
Nobody lives in a bubble.
Yeah.
And these people are clearly, like, they're going to write letters to each other. They're going to, like, learn things. And traveling was a huge thing.
Of course.
Anyway, beekeeping.
That's so cool. I had no
idea
it was so old. That is, like, the coolest thing to me.
I mean, I figured, but I thought people just kind of, like, chanced
it with
a bear and just
ran away.
I know.
That's so cool. Oh, my gosh.
And I did it in time.
Yay! I love that. Good job.
Now to take a nap.
Yeah.
It's your turn.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I'm going to bore the crap out of you.
What?
Just quickly, I don't know if you can hear it right now. I'm so distracted because my neighbors are playing the Happy Birthday song again.
I can't.
It started playing and I was developing like a twitch in my eye. Like, I can't handle it. So somebody over there is having a birthday or something. I don't know what is happening.
Oh, my gosh.
But for like an hour and a half straight before we got on this call, they've been blasting birthday song. And
I didn't
was like,
hear
oh,
it
I think it's stopped. And then I heard it start up again. And I was like,
oh,
no.
No. Just use a broom to like tap on your floor.
But they're not usually very bad. So it's like, oh, whatever. If they have a birthday party one day, I guess it's allowed.
I know. Also, sorry, I just realized I was like an inch away from my microphone. So
no,
editing the volumes will be quite interesting today.
Ha ha. You did that to yourself.
I know.
Okay. This week, I'm doing a topic that is like one of the first topics that I wanted to cover when we very first started the podcast.
Ooh. It's just one of mine that you're redoing.
Yeah.
Like, you really sucked at this. So let's just do it the right way.
It's beekeeping. I just redo it now.
Hey, mine wasn't so bad.
I'm kidding. It was great. Okay, so this week I'm doing the origin of pickles.
What?
Did you do it? Damn it.
No, I didn't do it at all. Okay. I'm just loving this because it's kind of like a continuation of, we know about cucumbers now.
Yeah.
You guys, if you don't know what I'm talking about, I hate you. You need to go back in time, listen to our old bitter cucumber episode.
Yes, it's the sound quality is painful in the first episodes, but
yeah,
it's the subject matter is worth it.
That's right.
Okay, so I wanted to do this.
Pickles!
Yeah, because I love pickles, like dill pickles. Like,
yeah.
I really love dill pickles.
Are you going to focus on pickles or pickling?
A little bit of both.
Yes!
But my goal was for pickles, like the pickled cucumbers.
Dang!
But I do talk about pickles, like pickling generally.
Are you going to explain why Vlasic does disgusting, overly sweet sandwich pickles that everybody loves?
I talk a little bit about those bread and butter pickles. It's not just Vlasic that does it. It's everybody.
I hate those.
I hate them so much.
You hate them too?
Yeah, they're terrible.
Oh,
and as a kid, I always thought, oh, pickles, yes, I'm going to have some. And they'd
pretty
be,
sliced.
So I'd take a whole bunch of them, because they were the slices, right?
Right.
Thinking like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And they always had them
out
at places.
Oh my gosh, I thought you liked those.
No.
This is the best news ever because everyone seems to like them.
They're terrible.
Ew.
I think Greg might like them.
Uh-oh.
But he loves, like, dill pickles.
Proper dill.
I think because, he didn't really know his pickles until he met me. And then I was like, no, this is what you have to like. He always gives me the pickle off the burger, off of burgers when we get burgers.
Hey, that's what I did too.
Yeah.
I think, you probably just demanded it.
I demanded it.
Shook it out of us. Hung me upside down by my ankles. Give me those pickles.
So, like, I love them so much. I could literally just stand there and eat a whole jar of pickles in one sitting if I needed to. Like, I won't do that, but I could easily.
Oh, wait. You guys, I have to tell this.
Oh my God.
The pickles are just always around. So the one time, the one single time I saw Kristen lose her temper, she happened, and like this badly anyway.
Yeah.
She threw a pickle jar across the room, and it was quite possibly the funniest thing I have ever
I don't know why I was even so angry. I like lost my mind, and we were taking groceries into the house, and I threw the bag that had the pickle jar in it across the kitchen, but it didn't break, which was good. On tiles yet, you guys. Oh, just, the rage.
I love that that's the height of your rage, pickles. A pickle jar across the room. Like, it's so that's stupid. My favorite.
I can't even have a good rage, like punch a wall or something like that. Okay, so I had almost forgotten that I wanted to do this topic, but then I went to the States for a little like shopping trip weekend, and we went to Trader Joe's. And whenever I go there, I always buy one of their like reusable bags because they're like they usually have really funny things or pictures or whatever on them, like funny sayings. So I bought this one that had all these like pickle pictures on it, like funny pickle stuff. And then it was only when I got home that I saw that there was something written on the very bottom of the bag. And this is exactly what it says. So it's the quote from there. Says, pickles have been dancing on taste buds for thousands of years, dating as far back as 2030 BC, when cucumbers from their native India were pickled in the Tigris Valley? I don't know. Isn't that crazy? It told me on the bottom of the bag the origin of it.
Dang! And I was
like,
it's,
so it seemed like fate telling me that I have to do this topic now.
Yeah.
Or maybe
well,
it was
done now.
Just my laziness that Trader Joe's was telling me
no,
that they had done half the job for me already.
Half? Okay, we're ready for fact two.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so we already kind of touched on it a little bit, but I just kind of want to clear up that technically any fruit or vegetable that has undergone pickling can be called a pickle. Like, so people, I know, I don't agree, but in a lot of stuff, they were like, oh, they had pickles with them or whatever. And it's like, they refer to it as that. So pickling means to bathe food in a salt brine or vinegar solution to preserve it. Bathe it. You're like scrubbing it down with a little sponge. Most bacteria can't flourish in highly acidic environments, so putting highly perishable food into vinegar helps to create a sort of natural force field against the microbes that cause food to go bad. So that's how it preserves it. And then when you put food into salt brine, there's a fermentation that happens. So it's a bit of a different process, but that fermentation creates lactic acid, which is then what prevents the bacteria from forming and whatever.
Right. Yeah.
So for the purposes of my, like, this episode, I'm going to cover the pickled cucumber, which in, like, North America and Australia, we refer to as pickles. Like, that's, we just that's what we know
and
as pickles.
And most people know them, like, know the vinegar ones.
Right.
Because, like, Polish people, they're, like, pickle, they're obsessed with pickles, pickles.
Mm-hmm.
And they do the sour pickle, which is, like, the salt brine, and then they do, like, normal dill pickle type.
Yeah.
With vinegar. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. And then we
just
have
just because I think it's kind of, I didn't know that sour pickles were a totally different brine. I thought everything had to have vinegar.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of the ones, like, they might not say sour pickle on it, but they'll say pickles in brine on the thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of the difference. I didn't know what the difference was before. And I was like,
me neither.
Oh, that's what that is. Okay. So. In other places, they're commonly referred to as gherkins because that is the type of cucumber that's the small cucumber that's used for pickling. They're called a gherkin cucumber. Like, that's the type of it.
Oh, okay.
So, I have a funny fact. In South Africa, they call them gherkins. So, every time we go, like, Greg and I go to, like, Subway or somewhere where he needs to ask for pickles, like, to put them on something, almost every single time he always has to ask me what they're called because he just wants to say gherkins, but like, he gets a lot of confused looks from people when he says that because it's not at all what we call them here.
Here, I know them as the tiny, tiny ones. That's the only time I see it labeled as gherkin, the little baby tiny.
Yeah.
So I thought those were gherkins.
And
the
that's
tiny
what
ones.
I thought he was talking about, where I was like, that's very specific. Like, okay. And then when we went and like bought a jar of pickles, he was like,
he
those are
gherkin.
Gherkins. Everything, like, they're all gherkins.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And it was so confusing to me because I was like, no, everybody calls them pickles. Like, I was just convinced that everybody called them that. Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah.
Okay, so pickling likely first originated in Mesopotamia around 2400 BC and is considered...
Uh-oh. Who pickled first? Who's the governor?
Oh my gosh. Yes. It's like Ronald. Ronald pickled it. What? Ronald of Mesopotamia for some reason. So it originated there 2400 BC and is considered one of the oldest methods of food preservation. So there is archaeological evidence of cucumbers being pickled in the Tigris Valley in 2030 BC. So Trader Joe's was correct because there is actual evidence of it. And so just to give everybody an idea of where that is, the Mesopotamia area is where Iraq is today. It also covers the top of the Persian Gulf, parts of Turkey, Iran, Syria, and Kuwait. So it's kind of in that area. It's thought that these first pickled foods may have been bathed. Again, there's that word. Obviously, I took this from something that really liked that word. in old wine or beer that slowly fermented. So that early stuff was, that's what they think that they were using. So that doesn't mean that cucumbers were being pickled just yet, like in the 2400, right? Mm. So they do know there was evidence in 2030 of cucumbers being pickled.
Right, but not quite.
But not quite yet. So fun fact, the English word pickle comes from the Dutch word pekel, P-E-K-E-L, which refers to the brine.
What?
Yeah. It's crazy how influential Dutch stuff was in historical things.
Oh, big time.
Which is crazy because growing up, I always hated that I was Dutch because I was like, it's such a non-culture. Like, it's not anything Italian or French or whatever. Like, nobody speaks Dutch. Nobody has that thing. But then when I learned in university about the historical significance of Holland, I was like, we were pretty cool.
I know.
We were terrible, but...
I have, cold smoked fish and...
Pickles?
A beehive guy.
Yeah. Don't forget communism. I guess you...
How dare you?
Okay, so cucumbers originated in India and were domesticated around 3,000 years ago, which means that the process of pickling food is over 1,000 years older than cucumbers being readily available to people.
Okay.
The Romans imported all sorts of foods from the countries that they conquered, in the ancient times, and they would pickle them for the journey in vinegar, oil, brine, and sometimes even honey. Crazy. That was crazy when I was like, honey? You can pickle stuff in honey? That's crazy.
I guess sugar.
Yeah.
Right? Crazy.
So pickled cucumbers were also spread through the trade routes because they lasted so long and they were thought to keep people really healthy.
Okay.
In Egypt, cucumbers were eaten by everyone from royalty to slaves. So once they hit these new places, pickled cucumbers made their way to Egypt, it was a fast
total madhouse.
They're even mentioned twice in the Old Testament Bible, so in Numbers chapter 12 verse 5 and Isaiah chapter 1 verse 8. Crazy.
What?
I didn't write down what they said because I don't care, but if you guys want to look it up.
You get the funniest stuff if you do.
One was not that funny, and then the other one I didn't bother looking up. I know. Okay. Because I really wanted to, because it would be hilarious.
But then
it was just kind of nothing. Yeah. Aristotle praised the healing effects of pickled cucumbers. And there is legend that at around 50 BC, Cleopatra claimed that eating pickles was the secret to her beauty. It is also widely believed that Julius Caesar, who was Cleopatra's lover and baby daddy, gave pickles to his Roman troops with the belief that it would make them stronger.
He just wants them more beautiful.
Yeah, exactly. And look
you
at your skin.
Ugly.
Yeah.
Blind them with your beauty, boys.
It was also around the same time that dill began to be used in both Egyptian and Roman diets.
Dang
and
it.
Ultimately became part of the pickle brine, a really common thing.
Damn.
For most of pickling history, people were adding spices and aromatics to the pickle brines. Like, so this was not uncommon that they were adding something into it, right? Things like garlic, mustard seeds, cinnamon, and cloves added flavor to the brine, but they also have antimicrobial properties. Which could help explain why some of these spices were chosen over other spices to put into the thing. Dill is also antimicrobial, and it was hugely popular in ancient Rome, like seriously popular there. And it was really popular in Egyptian times too, like for in Egypt, and it's been found in Egyptian tombs.
I'm just laughing because if anyone knows anything about dill, if you let it grow 1 year, just like let it grow naturally, you will never get rid of it. It's like one of the most invasive crops in the world.
They were leaning into it.
You can't get out of it. Yeah, it's just.
I love dill though. Oh, it smells so good. Yeah. Oh, it's my favorite. Dill on potatoes.
In mashed potatoes.
Yeah. It's so good.
I know.
And then so the popularity of dill spread along with the spread of the Roman Empire because it was such a popular herb that was used. It went with them, right? Like that's how it spread.
So they're just chowing on sausage. We know now that sausages, honey.
Yeah.
And dill pickles, apparently.
And dill pickles. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so that was all ancient times. By the Middle Ages, pickles had made their way to Europe and had become super popular there as well. Basically, anywhere they went, they became, like, super popular.
That's so funny. Yeah.
Queen Elizabeth loved them, and so did Shakespeare. Fun fact, some people credit Shakespeare with inventing the phrase, in a pickle. Yeah. So, in The Tempest, he has King Alonso ask the court jester Trinculo. I don't know if I'm saying that right. This is the what he says. How camest thou in this pickle?
I was going to actually investigate for my little like mini. I was gonna do like you know those phrases or whatever. I was gonna look up in a pickle like where.
Well, and some you should still because some people like say that it actually started. I think that it was some kind of Dutch phrase before this, and that so he wasn't actually it didn't originate with him, but he kind of took it and like changed it a bit.
Right, right.
But I was like, I didn't want to go down that rabbit hole. So yeah, you can still do it for your thing. And
okay,
there's more information there.
Wait, so, are pickles a polarizing food? Do you think? Like, do people hate them, love them? I assumed everybody loved them, but I feel like maybe not. I assumed
everybody loved them, too, but I've met quite a few people that do not like them at all.
Okay.
Which is crazy to me.
Yeah, I can't even fathom it.
It's definitely one of those things that makes me trust people a little bit less. Like, when it's the same thing, like, when people say they don't like cake. I'm like, who are you? How do you live your life? Or dogs. Right. Yeah. It's crazy to me. Like, who doesn't like pickles?
I know.
If you don't like pickles, you need to stop
listening. I'm okay with people having pickle preferences to an extent, unless it's bread, butter, whatever pickles. They can burn in hell for all I care, but...
Yeah.
The pickles, not people. Well, whatever.
The people, too. What's wrong with you? Bread and butter pickles. Jeez.
Ugh, they're not even pickles. They don't even taste... They're just bland.
They're terrible. Sorry. Okay. Now that we've established that. During the 15th and 16th centuries, so this time period is known as the Age of Exploration, ships that...
Oh, I thought you were going to say Age of Pickles. I almost lost my mind. Oh, my God. And now I'm so disappointed.
That would be awesome. It could be kind of the Age of Pickles a little.
Okay, pickle age.
It's done. Pickle age. So ships crossing the Atlantic stocked up on pickles and other pickled things. So they would have pickled cabbage, so sauerkraut. Like some other pickled foods, but pickled cucumbers were like super popular. So pickles were hugely advantageous to have on ships because they spoiled slowly, obviously. Mm-hmm. So they lasted a long time. But most importantly, cucumbers have vitamin C, which helped the sailors prevent scurvy.
Scurvy. I won't have scurvy either now.
Yeah. Yay. Look at you.
Also, I feel like I know the sour pickle, you can do this. But I know a lot of people think you have to be able to, you have to like do the whole sterilized canning type thing for pickles too. Mm-hmm. You don't have to. Yeah. Like my mom said in Poland, they would just have giant barrels.
Yeah.
So it's like the pickle barrel, right? Like, yeah. It's so cool.
And that's exactly what they would do. That's exactly what they did throughout, like, the ages. It would just be a big
ass. Seagulls drowning in there.
It would just be a big barrel with a bunch of pickles in it. Like, jars came later, like, individual jars was, like, a later thing. It was not what was common at first. Yeah, it's so funny. So scurvy was a major affliction on ships at the time and could take out, like, everybody. Like, like, people would die before they got to the New World or whatever.
Oh.
So without pickling, expeditions would have had to rely on dried foods and ingredients with naturally long shelf lives for sustenance. But this limited diet didn't provide enough nutrients to keep the crews healthy. Mm. So when I, like, started doing this topic, I was trying, like, I really wanted it to be about pickled cucumbers, because I was like, why pickled cucumbers of all the things? Because there's so many pickled things, right? Yeah. But why did that become, like, so supremely popular, right?
Right.
When I was looking up stuff, like, in the beginning years, like, pickled cucumbers was a thing, kind of from the get-go of when cucumbers were introduced, right? But other stuff was also popular. Like I said, sauerkraut was on the ships and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But when I kind of, like, really thought about why cucumbers, I think it boils down to, like, cucumbers being relatively easy to grow, because they're pretty easy to grow. Like, they're pretty hardy thing to grow.
Yeah.
They have, like, a crunchy but not hard texture, which is nice.
Right.
And they've got a ton of nutrients in them, which I actually didn't realize they had that many nutrients.
Me neither.
So they have vitamin K, vitamin B and C, as well as minerals such as copper, phosphorus, potassium, and magnesium. So it wasn't just, like, one thing that they were getting. It was a lot of stuff. And then a lot of, like, the brining process and, like, the pickling process.
Right.
Just gave them more things. Like, there was a lot of stuff that was really good for your gut that was in the different, like, microbials and bacterias and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
They were good bacterias.
It's kind of like the microgreens thing, how, like, the little baby greens, they have all the same nutrients that the plant, the grown plant, like adult lettuce, let's say, would have. It's just spread out more in the bigger plant, right?
So
it's not like they get equal nutrition. So with pickles, you can eat a bunch of little ones. It's probably packed. You're, like, full of magnesium.
Exactly.
Also, some people argue, like, that cucumber crops need a lot of water.
Really?
But they grow really well in just almost drought.
That's the thing. Like, whenever I've grown cucumbers or anything like that, like zucchini as well, it's like it grows even when you're trying to, like, you're not putting
squash
any effort
generally,
into it.
It's more like thirsty. Like, pumpkins are thirsty as heck, but they do grow, like you said.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. No.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they don't have as many diseases, right? I don't remember what my topic said about it, but
yeah.
Oh, it's just so crazy. Okay. So you were trying to figure out, like, why today we have a bunch of pickles everywhere all the time.
Well, just generally, like, what was it about pickles specifically
that got people
made it so popular and so pervasive almost, right?
But, I mean, carrots are also nutritious.
Oh, my gosh. Pickled carrots is one of my favorite things. My mom used to do, like, make pickled carrots.
I don't know if I've ever had one, but I've discovered pickled green beans, and I almost lost my mind.
Oh, those are so
good. I actually made one once.
It
was so good.
Oh.
Yeah.
I found something else. I'm just kind of scrolling through my thing. So I'm going to get to this in a little bit, but it also talks about how, like, in the colonial American thing, pickles were super popular because they were the only green, juicy vegetable treat that could be used throughout the year. So that was kind of something, too, where I was like, oh, it's like a green vegetable.
Like, and it's fresh and cool when it's just fresh.
Exactly. And so especially, like, in Eastern European, so Polish, like, all of those places, pickled, because they were colder, so in the cold winter months, they could only have, like, root vegetables, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, potatoes and whatever. And so they'd have
this, and pre-refrigeration.
Exactly.
Anywhere.
Yeah. So they'd have pickles that would add this like color, not only color to their plate, but like really like important nutrients.
And the nice crunchiness. Yeah.
And it was like, it had that sour kind of like, it was a punch of flavor for them.
Yeah.
Right?
And what are you going to do? Just like take a spoonful of sauerkraut and like when you're on a journey, like, I mean, that's not exactly.
Exactly. Right? Like, because people would sell them from those big barrels, right?
Yeah.
So it became a snack that people would go and you could buy just one pickle and you just like chomp away on
it. See, and that's where I drew the line in modern times, how there's like that pickle in a bag.
Oh,
and
yeah.
People take it as a snack. I'm like, No.
I'm not a big fan of big pickles that you have to bite into in a weird way. I'll do a big pickle spear, like the cut ones. Those I enjoy.
Yeah.
But it grosses me out
but
when you have to,
the idea of
going
to a gas station and I'm picking a pickle and then just sitting in my car eating a pickle. I'm like, that doesn't, no.
That
I have to be in the kitchen with the jar open, picking around with my fork and then.
Exactly. You know. Yeah, because you're like desperate for a snack and you're just like, this is going to be amazing. Okay.
We need to become sponsored by a pickle company because one in the history of the world has ever said that this is gonna be amazing.
Because I get so excited where I'm like, ooh. But then when you get a jar of pickles, like, and they're kind of like soft, they're not crunchy enough, it's the worst. It's devastating.
Soft
to me.
Pickles? I'm like, how does that happen? We need to get a scientist.
It's terrible.
On here to explain it and be like,
and I'm like so picky about my pickle brands because some of them are consistently crappy or like they go through phases where a batch will be like not good. Yeah.
Right.
It's bad. Okay. So there's a story that Amerigo Vespucci was, I'm going to tell you about this guy. He was a pickle peddler in Spain.
Pickle peddler.
Pickle peddler. So he was in charge of stocking ships with goods and supplies before their trips, before they left to go explore during this, like, era of exploration. He supposedly stocked Columbus's ships with pickles before he took off in 1492 to sail the ocean blue.
Please tell me he had stocks in a pickle company and he just put his own product on the ships.
His name was Vlasic. No. No. That would be awesome. Just branding on the, like, Columbus ship. So super fun fact. Amerigo Vespucci went on his own expedition in 1501 and he discovered Brazil. So you were talking about, in your thing, about South America. So he probably had bees on that ship as well. So he understood, unlike Columbus, that the area he landed in was a new continent. That was
sorry laughing about. Because you're speculation.
What do you mean speculation about the bees? You just said it's for sure happening. It's 100% true. This is all true, you guys.
All right. Oh, my gosh.
Okay, so he understood that the area that he landed in was a new continent that was new to Europeans. So remember how Columbus?
Columbus. Well, whatever.
Whatever, who cares? That moron. Yeah. Yeah. Columbus landed, and he thought he was in India, and so he called Native Americans Indians. Vespucci, he called it the New World. And so this claim that it was a new continent inspired this cartographer guy that has this crazy long name I'm not going to even pretend to pronounce to recognize Vespucci's accomplishments in 1507 by applying the Latinized form of his name, which was America, for the first time to a map showing the New World. Because this guy's name, what? Vespucci's first name is Amerigo. So the word America is the Latinized form of this guy's name.
Get out of here.
No.
Okay, so, not to be dumb. So Italian guy?
He was Spanish. Spanish? I think he might have originally been Italian, but he was operating out of Spain. And it's possible he was even on a Portuguese ship. Like, all happening at the same time. Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
So other cartographers followed suit, and by 1532, the name America was permanently affixed to the newly discovered continents.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that unreal?
And they were like, he's the pickle man.
He's the pickle
peddler
guy. Yeah.
With the muffin man. Pickle peddler.
Yeah.
I'm starting a new cafe.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I'm going to have an only pickle cafe and you can have muffins. Muffin tins. Don't even sell the muffins, just sell the tins.
My cafe will be on fire in 3 minutes. Okay.
Oh my gosh, yeah, and I don't want to sell any of those big pickles. It'll just be little mini ones. Okay, so Vespucci and Columbus are credited with bringing pickles over to America in the 1500s on the ships that they came. They also planted cucumbers at some of the places that they landed in, like Haiti. Like Columbus planted cucumbers in Haiti in order to restock their pickle stores for their continued journey. Isn't that crazy?
That's funny. And then Johnny Appleseed is like, let's add some apples.
Exactly. But that's how important it was to have that stuff that gave them the proper nutrients that they all believed was keeping them healthy and strong and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know? So pickles were a common part of the colonial American diet. Okay, I talked about this. Green, juicy vegetable treat throughout the year. By 1659, Dutch farmers in New York had begun growing cucumbers in the area that is now Brooklyn. So it was like all cucumber farms in that area.
What?
Which is crazy.
Oh my gosh.
Dealers bought the cucumbers from these farmers, pickled them, and sold them out of barrels on the street. This was the beginning of what would become the world's largest pickle industry.
Dang.
The later waves of immigrants to America, including the Eastern European Jewish people, would cement New York as the center of the pickle world.
Oh my gosh.
So in the 19th century, Jewish immigrants, there was this specific type of like Eastern European Jewish people. They have a name. I did not write it down, so I'm not even going to try to say it now because I'm sure.
Oh, so that Ashkenazi thing or whatever?
Yes, yes. I was like, I'm going to butcher how I say it. So they brought the kosher dill pickle to America at this time.
Kosher?
Yeah. So they
unkosher about normal pickles?
So that's the thing is that they said, like, the name of it doesn't necessarily, like, mean that it's actually kosher.
Okay.
So they would put cucumbers into large wooden barrels along with dill, garlic, spices, kosher salt, and water. And they left the cucumbers in there to ferment for a longer time period than normal. So it was usually over a month. So this was the thing that they did that was different from other pickles that were happening at the time. And this made a sharper, more sour pickle, and it became a popular street snack that was sold from push carts in tenement districts. So they would just like push their cart down like in the Jewish immigrant areas and sell pickles for a snack.
Pickles.
And now obviously it's like it's a common thing that in the delis and everything there you get pickles and
get a pickle.
It's a huge thing.
Yeah.
This is just some random fact that didn't really fit into anything else, but I thought obviously it was important to know is that in 1820, Nicolas Appert from France was the first to pack pickles in jars for commercial sale.
What?
I could have looked into it more, but I didn't.
Wait.
Sorry.
French guy?
A French guy. Yeah. That's weird, hey? But they had the little cornichons, right? Like they had the little pickles.
Yeah,
they loved those little
guys. Mustard in the jars.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
They know their food, those French people.
Yeah, they do.
So he was the first to pack pickles into jars for commercial sale. And then in the 1850s, there were two inventions that helped make pickles become even more popular so that it was like the jars and like just more accessible for people in their houses to have this stuff. Mm-hmm. So in Scotland, James Young invented paraffin wax, which helped to seal cans better and jars better and helped to prevent the spread of botulism with anything that was, like, in jars or cans.
Mm-hmm.
And then John Mason of Philadelphia invented a heavier jar called the Mason jar that could better withstand the high temperatures required to pickle and can things and stuff. Yeah. So those two things combined helped to make that packing pickles in jars like an actual legitimate thing that caught on, right?
Yeah.
So as pickles became more popular, American food companies jumped in on the pickle market. They were like, hey, we need to get in on this. Yeah. Heinz started selling pickles in the 1800s. And at the 1893 World's Fair, H.J. Heinz lured visitors to his out-of-the-way booth by giving away free pickle pins. So he wasn't giving away free pickles. He was giving away a pin that was a pickle, a little pickle.
Oh, I'm just loving. But they had like a tie to pickles. So when they have that three-pack now with the relish, mustard, and ketchup, I'm like, so you're allowed to because...
Yeah. Pickles were massive for them. So by the end of this fair in 1893, Heinz had given out 1 million pickle pins. Which was one of the most successful marketing gambits in U.S. history. Like, it was massive.
Yeah. A pin?
They repeated this promotion at the World's Fairs in 1896, 1898, and 1939. The promotion was so successful that they featured a pickle in their logo for more than a century.
What?
I know. And I don't know why I did not look up what that logo looked like.
That's officially the most shocking fact.
Isn't that insane?
I'm Googling this immediately.
Do
you
it,
guys.
Please do.
Heinz pickle logo? Yeah. Oh my gosh. Can't even type. Okay, the Heinz pickle logo. Let's see. Oh my god, it's literally just a pickle with Heinz in it.
So it's like super basic. Show me.
It looks like. I'm trying to figure out what's like the original. Hold on, where's the...
Oh my gosh, that's so basic. Okay, so they've got the 57 varieties, and it's like a pickle
pure
across
food
the
product,
center
like
of
it's
the
in a circle. Yeah.
Okay.
And then just pickle with Heinz across, but like...
That's hilarious. Who would have thought?
What?
I
they
know.
Dropped the pickle?
Because I never associated them with pickles, ever.
Ever. Me neither.
Ever, right?
I was kind of, like I mentioned, alluded to, I was a little bit outraged that they went into the relish market.
Yeah, and you're wrong to
like,
feel
listen,
that way.
I am so wrong. Should I be mad that they're in ketchup now? Like,
maybe.
Freaking Heinz.
Stay in your lane, Heinz. I know,
mind
right?
Blown.
Isn't that crazy? So there was... okay, I'll just do my little next blurb. So during World War II, the U.S. government rationed pickles, and 40% of the nation's production of pickles went to the armed forces.
Oh.
So again, they're using it because obviously it's like, you know, lasting long, it's healthy, whatever.
Yeah,
all that crap.
Yeah.
In 1948, the trade organization Pickle Packers International launched International Pickle Week, which takes place every year for 10 days in May. So it's not a week. It's longer than a week. But it's like a thing, a promotional thing for pickles every May. So
and
random.
And why May? May is the least pickly month ever.
Although
unless,
it's
like,
my
that's
birth
the very
month,
last.
So I love it. I appreciate it.
Oh, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, maybe it's like the tail end of like what you can safely eat in your jarred pickles.
Maybe, yeah.
And then that's the time to like start planting your new pickles.
Yeah. So there was a thing that I didn't go into too much, but there was a whole like thing about Vlasic pickles and how they decided to use the marketing thing of the stork bringing pickles, and they like tied into pregnant women craving pickles. Like they really used that as a marketing tactic.
Why did I never clue into that? Oh, okay.
I know. That's I didn't funny. Clue into it either. Okay. So that was the general history of pickles. And now I've just got some fun facts.
Nice.
So, fun fact, Dr. John Harvey Kellogg, our old friend.
No!
You might remember him from episode 16 in The Origin of Cornflakes, and if you don't, you should go back
him.
And listen to it.
Oh my gosh.
So he was not a fan of pickles. He believed specifically that pickles were one of the stimulating foods that needed to be avoided.
Oh no!
I thought that was hilarious that came up in some of my research, like specifically naming that he was against it. Mm-hmm.
So bland enough. Oh, man.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So, fun fact, the name for bread and butter pickles has an interesting origin because people were like, why are they called that? Some people say, oh, it was during the Depression that people would just have a, like, a bread, butter, and pickles as a sandwich.
I don't even want to give them a platform.
I know, but we
have to. Maybe the first time I veto your fun fact. Okay,
no, too bad. It's happening. Okay, so bread and butter pickles are made by adding something sweet to the pickling brine, like brown sugar or sugar syrup. I know. And they generally don't have garlic in them, and they're disgusting. So if you've never tried one, we would not recommend it.
Gross.
There are people that love them, though, which is crazy.
You know what's
to me.
Weird, though? I love relish. Like, I will have just relish on a piece of bread, and that's one of my favorite foods in the history of the world. And relish is sweet.
Yeah, but it has to be like relish. I only like relish on a classic hot dog with ketchup, mustard, relish.
That's the full shebang. Yeah, really that's true. But although relish has that, like, those red bits in it, so I wonder if it's more of, like, a balance of, like, the spicy sweet.
Yeah.
Maybe it has everything, but the bread and butter ones are just sweet, and it's, like,
they're just
vile.
Gross. Okay, so the earliest written record of the name bread and butter pickles comes from when Omar and Cora Fanning registered to trademark their logo for their product called Fanning's Bread and Butter Pickles in 1923. And it's thought that this name came from the bartering system that the Fannings once used, because apparently they used to trade their sweet pickled cucumbers for groceries, including bread and butter. Oh. So that's, like, where the name came from.
That's kind of sweet, but also gross.
Carl is not having it. She's so unimpressed. Okay, my very last fun fact, which is also so disgusting, and I can't believe this is a thing. Kool-Aid pickles, or coolicles, are enjoyed by children in the southern United States. They are created by soaking dill pickles in a mixture of Kool-Aid and pickle brine. You could see Carla's face right now. I had to include that because I'm like, what is happening? And it does not surprise me that it's in the southern United States. Sorry for offending anybody that lives in the southern United States. But
no,
that's
I'm not.
Just insanity.
What is wrong with you? Ew.
And
I
that's
eat a lot
the
of gross
origin
stuff.
Of pickles.
Yeah. That was amazing. My cousin, I remember getting into a huge nasty fight with my cousin when we were little because she insisted that pickles were grown, that they grew. The like pickles were pickles and cukes were separate. I'm like, no, it's the cucumber and you pickle it. She's
and
like,
you
no.
Pickle it. Pickling is the process.
Yeah.
And we've just named it after that. That's
hilarious. And I don't know if she was trying to, like, maybe articulate, like, that a specific kind of cuke that's not like an Englishness cucumber, right? It's like a.
That was
no, because I kept stressing, you pickle it. And it was a big fat fight. And I still remember it to this day.
Hmm. Interesting.
Stupid, but whatever.
Should we get her on the call? And here she is to defend herself. Oh my gosh, could you imagine?
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, thanks for listening. Remember to like, subscribe, and review. You can follow us on Instagram. We are at podcast.or.something. Or you can write to us at podcastorsomething@gmail.com if you have any questions, comments, or you want us to cover a certain topic. We love taking listener suggestions. And we will talk to you later or something. Bye.
Bye.
I love you. Bye.